Hello and welcome to the T3 podcast. If it were a real show, we'd be on TV by now. Coming up this week, it can log your keystrokes, track your location, and even read your messages, all in the name of improving customer services, you understand. Carrier IQ, and why you may or may not have nothing to fear. YouTube gets a spangly new redesign. Spotify gets apps. Whew. And Angry Birds gets in the Christmas spirit. Plus, we'll be looking at the worst tech revamps ever. And by we, I mean just me, myself, and Mr. T3 himself. It's Duncan Irene Bell. Welcome.
Hello.
I don't think we've ever revealed your middle name.
Did you say Irie?
Irene, as in me, myself, and...
There's a brilliant picture of Brian Ferry, or Sir Brian Ferry, or whoever he is now. He was getting some sort of award from the
Lord
Queen.
Lord Ferry.
And Lord Ferry of Mersey. And he was with his sons, who all look exactly as you'd expect. Very sort of tall, quite handsome, very thin. The best thing about it was the caption underneath had their names, and they were called like Orlando, Merlin, something else ridiculous, and Tara. Huh. Which I always thought was a girl's name.
There we go.
But I assume he's named after the house in Gone with the Wind.
Well, I was listening to Frank Zappa's son.
Dweezil.
Dweezil on Radio 4.
Was his sister Moon Unit?
Moon Unit wasn't there, which is really disappointing. Shame. But his name, he was sort of saying, you know, oh yeah, it's nice having a unique name. But Dweezil, you can cut, it sort of sounds...
It sounds kind of scuzzy.
It sounds like it should, you know, it could be a name.
Yeah, but a kind of redneck kind of name.
But Moon Unit, you can't really get away with that, can you?
Well, my favourites were David Bowie, who called his son Zoe, and Mark Bolan, who called his son Roland.
Brilliant.
That's just so brilliant. If you're not very good at remembering names, just go for one that rhymes with the surname.
I could call my child Audley.
Audley Maudsley.
There we go.
That'd be fantastic. You should. In fact, you must.
There we are. Excellent. Well, that's that job sorted for future use.
Yep. Right. That's all we got time for this week.
There we go. On that bombshell. Anyway, Dad, how your week? You've been ill.
Yeah, well, no, I've been recovering from being ill, and I'm now ill as a result of recovering from being ill, because I haven't had a drink, really, for about a month.
Well, that causes terrible withdrawal symptoms.
No, you feel very healthy. The problem is, because I felt better, I was at an event last night, so I was drinking again, and now I feel absolutely atrocious. So I think I'm going to go back to not drinking, just as a... I'm just going to become a very dull teetotaler.
Hence the large cappuccino.
But no, but it gives me something to talk about. Other than that, I've had a very good week, and I don't want to moan about anything this week, so I'm going to talk about something I've enjoyed this week. And my one slight moan about it is I have to kind of talk about it in a way, because it's only on for 4 days, so by the time you hear this, you probably have missed it. If it turns out it is still on, and I haven't bothered to look, but do Google it, do get down, because it's very good. It's the Robotville Expo, if I can call it that, at the Science Museum, which, like most things at the Science Museum, is jolly good. And what I like most about it is it appears the prevailing thing in building robots at the moment is make them as creepy as hell. Make them really, really horrific and the kind of thing that gives children nightmares.
Have they got the poster boy of robots, the Asimov?
No, it's nothing. I mean, to be honest, they're not really as sophisticated as that. No. They all sort of, they all do different things. I think if you took every robot there... and put them all together, you'd have an absolutely amazing robot, but they haven't, so you don't.
Slightly unwieldy. No.
But there's this one that's like a corpse that's had all its skin pulled off. But like, well, not a corpse, it's a robot, obviously. But it does look kind of very much like a human whose organs have been exposed. And it's got a massive one eye in the middle of its face. And it really is, which sort of follows you around, obviously. And that's extremely creepy. And then there are several that look very much like sort of small children, but like kind of devil children. there's one, the Italian one. It's like a sort of very angry looking child. And I think the reason it's angry is because it's basically been nailed to the floor. The guy yesterday was going, "Well, we are working on making it walk, but at the moment, as you can see, it is attached to the floor." And see, I did notice. Yeah, it's basically got a big pole up its arse, and its feet are sort of secured to the floor. That's why it looks so angry, I guess.
I think that is kind of a prerequisite of a proper robot. It needs to be able to walk.
Yeah, that's,
you know,
the thing.
These ones that build cars and stuff. I mean, what, you know, there's just arms and they're bolted on.
Yes.
That's not a robot.
And this was a little bit like that, because what this one does is it views things and it learns what things are, and then it can pick them up. the thing about, like I say, all these robots, although I'm sure they're near the cutting edge of robotics, I think maybe my idea of robotics is more advanced than robots actually are, because it's not that sophisticated. It's like, you can see that it does recognize, you hold up a ball, it does recognize the ball. But then you have to stand there for about 5 minutes as its arm moves agonizingly slowly towards it. Kind of almost like those things at the seaside where it tries to pick up a cuddly toy and never ever does. It sort of feels the ball, and then its arm sort of kind of swims around a few times, and then eventually it does pick it up. But I'd almost lost interest.
The dream of Jetson's robot butlers is still somewhat distant.
Judging by this exhibition, it's some way up, but it's still a fascinating thing. There's another one that's like a cockroach, and again, quite creepy, quite grotesque, but a very interesting way of getting around. Like, probably much more practical than teaching it to walk,
and able to survive Holocaust, nuclear Holocaust.
Yeah, it did look. So, it looked like a robust thing.
Excellent. Yeah. Now, on to our top story. And Carrier IQ has been causing something of a stir. Sounds so innocuous. It's over fears that it's tracking Android users' every move and keystroke. Talk of a class action lawsuit of the state for a breach of wiretap laws.
You don't want somebody watching your keystrokes, do you?
No, definitely not.
When a man's in the privacy of his own
stroking
home, stroking his keys. You don't want somebody watching in.
So what is it, and should you be worried? Well, first up, let's hear what it can do. This is Trevor Eckhart from Connecticut, who unearthed all this, giving us a flavor.
The next thing that we see is this other application with the same icon, once again nondescript, and it's called IQRD. Now, in here we see we are presented with an option to force stop. Now, this is a little weird because we have not seen this in the running applications list before, but if it is given us the option to force stop, it means it must be running. The permissions that it has are below, and you can see a pretty extensive list of permissions here. Everything from calling phone numbers, stuff that costs us money, sending text messages, reading text messages, getting our location, recording audio, changing our audio settings, playing with Bluetooth, changing network connectivity, all sorts of stuff that this has. The last thing that I'm going to show is trying to press the force stop button. You can see it actually does nothing. You are unable to stop this IQRD.
So there we are. Well, first thing, Trevor, buy a microphone. Then the videos that you send out to the world might sound a little better. But we'll move on from that point.
That's him told.
Yeah.
You just got owned, Trevor.
But aside from that, that was just one little aspect of it he was showing there. And what he was showing was in the...
that sounded quite large.
Yeah.
It basically controls everything. It can use everything that's in your phone.
But it's a bit more sinister than that, because there's no app icon for it, so you wouldn't know it was there. If you go into... the only way you can see it's there is by going into running applications. And there it is, and you open it up, and it says all this. Basically, it can own you, and you can't close it.
Hmm.
And you wouldn't know it was there. So that's quite scary. And then what he does is he hooks up his phone to via USB to his computer, so it'll just show... and it does the diagnostic bit, which basically... It just types out everything that's, you know, running on the phone. It puts it all down in text. And it shows that the software...
It types it out.
Is whatever, I don't know, a little mouse inside the... Never mind. but basically what it shows is that every time you do anything, this carrier ID is kind of making a little log, making a little report.
Yeah, yeah.
You press a key, it says, oh, yeah, you've just pressed this key. You
He's turn the stroking phone his on. Keys again.
Yes. It pops up showing what the text message contents before you even read them. So before the phone displays it,
it knows.
Carrier IQ already knows what's in the text message. And the really bit scary bit was he went to https://google.com,
yeah,
which is what you use if you want to be ultra secure.
Yeah,
and
encrypt
everything you send and all this kind of business. And it was just taking straight from that. What you were searching for.
Recording what you're typing.
Going, you know.
Because that is the way you get around encryption on websites.
That wasn't even a keylog. It was displaying exactly what he'd searched. It was just showing the search string. And it's like, how is this even possible? You know, it's...
Not so secure after all,
it's rather scary. Now, yeah. So it's on there. The point is that in the UK, maybe we shouldn't be that worried. Because... well, of three of the networks that have actually responded to, because The Guardian asked all the networks, Vodafone, Orange and O2 all say, well, it's not on any of our phones. It seems to be a US issue.
Right.
But it's scary stuff, nonetheless.
I think it's ridiculous. I mean, it's exactly the same as when Apple had that thing that was, you know, sort of basically tracking where you were going.
Mm.
Whether or not they're using that data for anything, and, you know, I dare say they aren't, you know. Why put it on the phone?
Yeah.
It is basically like you're going out of your way to sort of frighten and annoy people.
Mm. Well, Apple which, are kind of implicated in this one again.
Those bastards.
I know.
I thought you said Android phones.
Yeah, it is Android phones, but it's also been on Apple phones.
Right, okay.
The demonstration was using Android phones.
Okay.
And Apple said, we stopped supporting Carrier IQ with iOS 5.
We stopped supporting it.
in most of our products, and we'll remove it completely in a future software update.
Mm.
But what they've said is kind of that kind of, you know, anything it was doing, we were just, it was all anonymized.
It was all a long time ago, mein Führer, yeah. And we were just obeying orders.
Yeah, and it says categorically, we never recorded keystrokes, messages, or any other personal information for diagnostic data.
Fair enough.
And have no plans to ever do so. So, okay.
It's nice of them.
Yeah, that's good. But again, it's not kind of how it has been used. It's how it could be used and why hide it.
So explain this to me, Dan.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, this, I suppose this is the point. What's it for? What's it meant to be for? Why is it doing all that?
Here is the
why is it
official explanation from Carrier IQ.
Here on the script.
They say, we are counting and summarizing performance, not recording keystrokes or providing tracking tools. The metrics and tools we derive...
Why is it in the piece of software then?
Exactly. The metrics and tools we derive are not designed to deliver such information, nor do we have any intention of developing such tools. Now, when they say...
But also, surely, isn't that a classic like backdoor that could be exploited by somebody else? I mean, okay,
well,
you're not using it.
Yeah, yeah. Some malicious software gets on your phone, knows how to take the information from this application.
I don't want somebody going up my backdoor...
Quite.
...whilst I'm making keystrokes.
Yeah.
Okay?
Now,
just to make that very clear.
When they say we're not recording keystrokes, I think technically it's true because it's not a key logger in its purest sense. It doesn't just type out everything you're typing. But things like when
you type out like it's a thing literally sat there.
But when the problem is when you press say a number on the keypad,
yep.
Those numbers have IDs. So you press a 3 and it comes up with ID 52 or whatever. It doesn't. So it's not a key log in its purest sense, but it wouldn't take a genius to work out how to make it into a key logger. Yeah. Exactly.
I don't think you're exactly going to need the bloody Enigma machine.
No.
to work out. Well, yeah, you know, because people are so sophisticated about technology these days. You know, particularly if you're listening to this podcast, obviously,
of course, yeah,
to an
right
extent, if you're
the creme de la creme
appearing on this podcast. Well, maybe I wouldn't go that far. So I just don't understand why somebody could have a piece of software like that, put it on a phone, and not expect to get a massive shitstorm at some point in the future. It just seems like extraordinary naivety. And I know technologically minded people sometimes they know more about technology than they do about people, and maybe it didn't cross any of their minds because they're all
exactly
idiots. But it's I don't know. It just seems extraordinary.
But the HTC phone that this was demonstrated on, and this just to reiterate, this is HTC in the States, not here. But had all sorts of things, you know.
Although I still wouldn't recommend buying an HTC phone, but that's just a separate matter.
That's just Duncan.
Yeah, that's just me.
but has all sorts of things where it's like, you know, can we do this? Can we do this? Can we do this? Can we do this?
Mm.
Really great, you know, open, brilliant. For all the HTC things on the phone, all the other third part, apart from this.
Yeah, it's weird.
Which is the most invasive.
Like it's the special app.
Yeah.
It's the one that cannot be questioned for whatever
exactly
reason.
And what Samsung and HTC have said is that, look, this isn't us that's putting it on the phones. It's the carriers asking us to do it. Because
the
carriers want, if your phone starts, you know, dropping calls or doing other things that you know, would you know, make their network look a bit crap.
Yeah.
They want to know why it's doing it.
Mm.
Fair dues.
Well,
but
is it?
I mean, but ask. You know, well, just ask.
Yeah.
Just say, look,
exactly,
to improve our, you know, network, we'd like to collect this data. It'll be anonymized and
yeah,
you know,
which everybody else routinely does. Even Apple says, you know, do you want
well,
to
exactly,
send back
yeah
performance data
yeah, and you can
to
turn it off.
To Apple?
Just ask. You know, is it that difficult?
Yeah. What's the matter with you?
Dan Rosenberg, who's a bit of an authority on all things.
What, more so than us?
Yes. I think we have to doff our cap on this occasion. He's written an open...
he's the number one Dan.
An open post. Dear Internet, Carrier IQ does...
Dear Internet.
Dear Internet, yeah, that open. Carrier IQ does a lot of bad things. But people need to recognize that there's a big difference between recording events like keystrokes and HTTPS URLs to a debugging buffer, which I think is the situation, which it says is pretty bad in itself, and actually collecting, storing, and transmitting this data to carriers, which doesn't happen. After reverse engineering Carrier IQ myself, this is why I kind of doffed my cap. I'm not sure I could reverse engineer Carrier IQ. I've seen no evidence that they're collecting anything.
I'm sure you put
your mind to it. I'm sure. they're collecting anything more than what they've publicly claimed, i.e. anonymized metrics data. CIQ should be held accountable and be under close scrutiny so that this type of privacy invasion does not occur. But all the recent noise on this is mostly unfounded. So I think that kind of puts it neatly in a nutshell. They should, you know, they've done wrong, but not as wrong as people think they've done.
No, well, that's what I mean. It's more just a kind of, like, surely it would have occurred to somebody, this is a PR disaster waiting to happen sort of thing, as opposed to these men wearing capes with twiddling their moustaches and going ha-ha-ha-ha as they root through all your personal possessions. Well, hopefully.
Yes.
According to the internet's number one Dan, they're not doing that, and it's just going to a debugging buffer or whatever. But people, you know what I've noticed about people these days? They have a tendency to think the worst about things and people. Yeah. And I think you have to bear that in mind.
But also in the States, you know, a rather litigious society, this is...
Yeah, well, that's the other thing, yeah.
It's class action, you know, city.
Over here, everybody will just go, oof. Whereas in America, yeah, it's like a multi-billion dollar lawsuit for loss of...
Nothing.
Whatever, yeah.
loss of keystrokes.
For minor irritation.
Excellent. So there we go. So I think the key message there is, don't worry.
Don't panic.
Yes, it's all fine. Plenty more where that came from. So let me say, here is the news. Say hello to Spotify apps. Hello, Spotify apps. Not content with merely streaming music, Spotify is now getting its own app store. 30 are there at launch, from Songkick, which makes event recommendations based on your listening habits, to Last.fm, which records every keystroke. Which brings integrated lyrics. That's nice. It's in beta for now, and there's no word yet on an official UK launch.
Yes, well, and YouTube has a brand new look with what the company calls the biggest redesign in its history.
Wow.
Google Plus and Facebook are now tightly integrated, however, with an activity feed dominating the middle of the page. New templates are also on board for changing the look of your channel pages.
They are. The ice cream sandwich...
That meant nothing to me. I don't know what any of that meant.
It's all very clear.
The Facebook.
Yes. The ice cream sandwich packing Galaxy Nexus is landing on Vodafone. Available for free on a 2-year, £41 a month contract. Not free then.
No.
That'll get you 900 inclusive minutes, unlimited text, and 750 meg of data.
And after all those niggles we highlighted last week, the iPhone 4S has become the most customer satisfying handset ever.
Hey!
Unless you want to use the music app, which I have to say is terrible.
There we go.
The rest of the phone does seem to be okay. With 96%, a big 96% of 4S users stating they are satisfied. That's presumably with the 4S.
But are they 110% satisfied? That's the question.
Can they get no satisfaction? Anyway, ChangeWave Research has put the iPhone 4S at the top of its customer satisfaction charts. A lowly 1% say they are very unsatisfied with the device.
It's pretty good. The Nintendo 3DS is finally getting the update it's been waiting for, bringing with it 3D video recording, access to Hulu, and increased functionality in the Mi Plaza. After originally being set for a late November release date, it'll now be ready and available on the 8th of December. Mark my words.
Whereas Angry Birds is also embracing the Christmas spirit with a new Angry Birds 12 Days of Christmas app. Yes, there were some people dressed as Angry Birds in the T3 office yesterday, and they were singing the 12 Days of Christmas. With the lyrics had been changed, so they were now about birds and pigs and stuff. So that was great. That's the kind of fun that we have in the T3 office. Do I still have something to read here?
Keep reading.
Sorry. Proceedings kick off with an angry bird in a pear tree. No, I believe they end with an angry bird in a pear tree, do they not?
No, you start with on the first day of Christmas, my true love sent to me an angry bird in a pear tree.
Oh, okay, all right.
And then by the end of the song, yes, you do end. Never mind.
But, all right, fair enough. And conclude with 12 Samsung mobiles. Yes. Good. look out for that.
Good.
Great news, Dan. I think it's fair to say it's a slow news.
It's been a slow news fortnight.
It has a bit.
I think we've got to say.
The news that I heard, but I haven't had time to look into it, so it may be incorrect news, but that's never stopped me.
No.
Is apparently the Lumia has sort of died on its arse. Or is dying on its
arse. It's not selling hugely, which is a shame, I think, as we've all...
Nice phone. Yeah. I think the biggest letdown for me with the Lumia 800 was the coloured ones look so nice in the photographs, but you can't get them in this country, and you won't be able to until next year, apparently.
Oh,
my sources tell me. So, you're left with a black one, and that just looks like any old phone.
It does. Yeah, no, you're right, actually. That would enhance things quite a lot. But I think partly the problem is... that it's Windows Phone hasn't got a user base that, you know, a hardcore of fans.
It hasn't gained traction. That's what you're trying to say.
Yeah, but a Nokia, the people that did like it, they were a bit weird. And
they're probably boycotting it because it hasn't got Symbian.
Yeah, well, they obviously saw something in Symbian. I mean, God knows what, but that must have been what they liked. So,
Love is blind.
So, you know, even though Nokia, Windows Phone is far superior,
yeah,
it's probably turned off old Nokia fans. And has yet to get its own fans.
Well, yeah, there could be something to that theory, yeah. Mm. I mean, I suppose the problem with Windows Phone 7, although much as I like it, it does have that problem of, like, no apps.
That is true.
Basically. So maybe that's the thing that's holding it back, and as the apps come on board. But then, of course, they won't come on board if nobody's buying it. It's a vicious circle inside a downward spiral.
What a catch-22.
It is a catch-22 in a Pandora's box,
it wrapped
surrounded
in an
by
enigma.
A downward spiral.
Time to see what you've been tweeting to at @T3DOTCOM and posting on the official T3 podcast group on Facebook.
Yes, which I believe has recently had a revamp of some description. You have to do a lot of reading when Marie's away, don't you? God. Right. So, in reference to last week's show, Sion Wong says, "The guy that looks like a Muppet. You guys are just so professional." Smiley face.
That was a reference to who were we talking about off the Gadget Show?
The one who doesn't look like an alien.
Yeah, no, that one who looks like a Muppet.
Yes.
Yeah.
But no, which one's he?
The one, you know, the Muppet one.
What was his real name? Not Jason Bradbury.
Well, you might get an answer.
Oh, sorry. I think he looks like an eagle, says Gareth Sullivan. He does actually have it's kind of hooded, sort of like...
I see where he's going.
Look, I know what he means. I think his name is Cliff, although I might just have made that name up.
Is that a kind of a clever eagle cliff thing, you know, like...
I think he's making a joke about him being quite forgettable.
What do you call a man with a seagull on his head sort of thing?
Very good.
Might be.
Could be. Yeah. God, what the hell is his name? That's going to bug me now.
Peter Gilbert.
No, that's not it.
PR Gilbert 2001 to his friends asks, "Is Duncan ever happy? Drops his iPhone in the toilet, moans. Gets an HTC, moans. Gets an iPhone again, moans. What gives?"
Well, I'm just...
never happy.
Never satisfied. I'm always hungering for the next...
thing to moan about.
The next thing. I'm more than happy to have an iPhone again. I wasn't exactly unhappy to have an HTC. I was certainly unhappy to have dropped my phone down the
and
toilet.
And you're still unhappy with the music on your iPhone.
Oh, that's a bloody joke. Because the thing I think is terrible about it is obviously
we have opened a Pandora's box.
Yeah, I have. What basically turned Apple from being a sort of rather dull purveyor of, sort of swanky laptops into a sort of household name was music devices.
There we are.
So and now
they should be able to get it right.
It's like they see music as like a cheap whore to be used and then tossed aside. Well, they go off with their, you know, phone technology floozy on, some kind of bloody honeymoon or whatever. And the music prostitute is left at home neglected.
Mm.
That's the way that I see
quite,
it.
Quite some analogy. Underscore...
Give some more money to the music prostitute. Make her happy so she can spend her money. Or it could be he. Could be a rent boy. Yeah. Could be a music rent boy.
So sort of make it a Julia Roberts, is that what you're saying?
Yes, exactly.
Got it. Underscore Genty or Genty, brackets, Will Gent or Gent. I don't think we've ever got the...
Genty.
The definitive pronunciation.
No, it's
Will.
Obviously Gent, isn't it? He's not, unless he's Belgian. Well. And then Gent is usually spelled with an H, although not always.
Good.
You learn all sorts of things on this show, don't you?
Will, anyway.
Correct spelling of Ghent in
highlights the awkward moment when you listen to a bit of the CNET podcast and you realise it's crap. T3 all the way, winky smiley face.
The Canuts podcast, I call it.
Hey.
And you see, do you know why? Do you know why I call it that?
Yes. Paul... Paul made
it's because it's like a Saxon king who tried to turn back the tide.
Yes, Canute.
Because that was the correct spelling of Canute.
He was the first.
You see, this is like this is why people prefer this podcast to the CNET one.
Canute was
or the Canut one, as
yeah,
I call it.
Canute was the first king of England.
The Angles,
the whole of England. As it
well,
were.
Was it the whole of England?
The whole pretty,
of
England, much,
as it was known then.
Pretty much the whole of England. Yes. Before he, that, you had you know different. Whatever bits.
Exactly. So this is the kind of historical and geographical facts that you just don't learn about on the CNET podcast.
And I'm sure I've probably mentioned this before, but King Canute was the, I think, the grandson or great-grandson of King Blatand.
Blatand?
Who, yes, who unified the Scandinavian countries, and his name literally translates as Blue Tooth, and that's where you get Bluetooth from, and that's why Bluetooth is a rune, the symbol for Bluetooth.
That is fantastic.
There you go.
Is so, it true?
It's true, yeah, it's very true. Although, the only bit where it falls down, and it's not my fault, is that...
it's in terms of its accuracy.
Blatand in modern Dutch is Bluetooth, but when he was called Blatand, it didn't mean Bluetooth, it meant, I don't know, fierce warrior or something like that. But there we go.
Interesting. Mm. Well, you wouldn't be very scared of a kind of rival king who was called Bluetooth. You'd just be like, well, does he eat a lot of beetroot or something? Or why is his tooth blue?
Doesn't make much sense. Paul Maitlando has an answer for us on the Scottish Sydney question. No Sydney in Scotland, but there is a Moscow about 25 miles south of Glasgow. Also be funny to hear you guys pronounce, and I'll say this phonetically, Milngavie, start of the West Highland Way, and always being filmed on Taggart. Duncan, do you know this one?
I'm assuming you don't pronounce it like you just said.
No,
it.
It's not Milngavie, I'll say that much.
Is it something like Milgar or something like
that's,
that?
That's pretty good, actually. It's because I went there, and I think I got it wrong when I went there. It was many moons ago. But my wife works up in Scotland every now and then. She nips in there. And yeah, it's Milngavie. I think I'm right in that. And there's some long explanation as to why. But yeah, that sort of noise you just made was pretty close. After
good.
After a few tenant super, I think most people may say it like that.
I reckon they probably would.
Yeah.
Dear, that's such a terrible hangover. I so wish Ree was here so I could just sit in a corner and she could just sort of talk.
Well, Duncan, there's...
Have we talked about any technology at all
this
week?
There's no rest for the wicked, because what have we got for our Gadget of the Week? This is quite a cool one.
Well, it's all right. It's the Zoom 2.
Woo!
Which, I don't actually remember what the Zoom 1 looked like. Did it look like this? Because basically it's what I can only describe as a sort of lozenge
shape. Looked a bit like that, but much chunkier.
All right, okay. Yeah, it's like a nice slim thing, widescreen. I can't get it to turn on because I can't find the
struggle
standby
with this earlier.
Button.
one moment.
That's a good start.
Keep padding, Dunk. There we go.
Yeah, so it's...
Gosh, there we go.
Oh, there we go. Yeah, so it's an Android tablet, and I'm afraid I don't know what variety of Android it's running.
It's Honeycomb.
Is it Honeycomb?
Yeah.
Well done, Dan.
Which is a bit of a disappointment, really. Although, apparently, it is getting ice cream sandwich. But essentially, that looks exactly like the first, you know...
Do you know
the first Android problem, tablets we had?
The problem with technology in general, and tablets in particular, is I've got nothing to say about this because it's the same as every other Android tablet.
Well,
the screen's quite nice, and the camera isn't very good, and who wants a camera on a device this big anyway?
The camera is better than the iPad 2s, but that is saying absolutely nothing.
Yeah, it's woeful on the iPad 2.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's nice and thin now. It's a much nicer looking holding thing than the original Zoom.
I wouldn't buy it under
any
circumstances.
It's a big improvement, but in terms of, you know, usability or what it does, It doesn't do anything different from the original.
I don't know if it's because it's very new, but it's not a pre-release because it came in a box and everything, a proper box. It does seem a little bit laggy, which all Android tablets do in my experience.
It doesn't seem to be leaping to my every caress.
I'll tell you what, I wish I had this instead because it's a much better thing.
Go on.
And it seems to have slipped out almost under the radar, maybe because the Tablet S wasn't massively well received. But the Tablet P, have you seen that? The fold-up Android tablet from the Sony one.
Yeah.
That's quite good.
Oh, you
like that? Well, because the thing about it is it's got something different
it's
about
totally
it.
Totally different.
And it's, you know, it's nice because it makes you think of the old Nintendo Game & Watches.
Yeah. You've had a play with it.
Yeah, it works okay. I mean, obviously, the fact that the screen does have a massive bloody great gap in the middle of it is an issue with certain things. Like video, it only plays video in the top screen, which kind of makes sense, but then that means the video is rather tiny.
Hmm.
But it's very, of course, it's very portable. It actually has a USP, which no other Android tablet I can think of. Like, somehow Asus has made having a plug-in tablet into some kind of killer USP feature.
Mm.
And I don't know how they've pulled that one off. But okay, so I will say there's one other Android tablet that has some sort of feature to it, and it's that Asus one. But this one, yeah, it's like, yeah, it folds up. It's very small. It goes in any pocket. It's good.
Nice. Okay. All right. Well, so maybe that's our gadget of the week. Well, anyway.
Well, for me it is, but it's not here in the studio. So.
The Zoom 2, 380 quid... 16 gigabytes, Wi-Fi makes it cheaper than an iPad. It's do you know how much lighter than an iPad 2 that is?
I'd say about a tenth of a gram.
2 grams lighter.
That's what I meant. 2 grams.
So there you go. It's superior to the iPad 2 in every department.
Yes.
We can conclusively state.
Oh.
As I knock my yogurt.
Granola. Oh, granola on floor incident.
Cleaner to aisle 3, please. T3 has not long had a redesign, but tech revamps don't always work out. T3's been looking at the 10 worst from the proverbial new Coke to, well, every Facebook update ever.
Yes.
So, Duncan, what have you pulled from this list?
Well, I'm afraid I'm going to have to say any band, any rock band that attempts to sort of go... electro. Well, possibly the honourable, semi-honourable exception of Radiohead, I guess.
Mm. Do you two fall into this list?
Yeah, you two. Yeah. David Bowie.
Ooh.
I love David Bowie, but I have to say...
I love that man.
His attempts to go jungle in the sort of mid-90s were not an unalloyed success, shall we say.
No.
The great thing about jungle and drum and bass, for me, was that it used quite cheap equipment to make... music, like basically very, very inexpensive.
And in fact, the more distorted on the mic you could be, the better.
Yeah, well, it was all about just like sampling drum loops. And what I found hilarious about Bowie's attempt to do jungle was he got incredibly highly paid session musicians to like recreate the kind of the drum and bass sort of drum break, which everybody else like got for free by sampling and then looping.
Yeah.
And it's just, it sounded dated like 10 seconds after being released. It was just, it was like disco vicar. Basically, like a terrible, terrible misguided attempt by a late middle-aged man to get trendy. So, dear, oh dear.
Okay, that's a pretty valid one, I think.
And then, yeah, don't even get me started on U2. I mean, Coldplay, Coldplay tried to go electro by basically completely stealing, well, not stealing, because they paid them, again, huge amounts of money. They just took one of Kraftwerk's tunes and turned it into one of their own tunes. Which is just like, well, where's the creativity in that?
During the Children in Need concert, I was sat on the sofa with my parents, actually, and Coldplay came on. I thought I quite like a bit of Coldplay, and my dad described it as noise, which is
hilarious,
the most damning criticism that a parent, I think, can give to music.
Well, it's funny because their music's so insipid. Like, to a parent, it's like, oh, punk rock,
yeah, it's like
long hairs, layabout, beatniks.
Do you realise how mainstream this is?
What would they make of, I don't know, Slayer or something? Like, God, this is the end of the world.
Maybe passed out by that stage. I think I've got to go for number six, Sonic the Hedgehog, because Sonic of my youth, he was the cooler Mario.
Mm.
You know, Mario, you know. And then Sonic came along, and it's like, ah, look, hard-edged.
It's a sassy hedgehog.
You know, he's got a fox for a girlfriend and, you know.
Quite literally got a fox for a girlfriend.
Foxy girlfriend.
And his best mate is an echidna, which nobody had ever heard of echidnas before.
But now,
or echidnae.
It's educational as well. And, you know, he was quite cool. Now, he's, you know, he's racing Mario in some ridiculous Olympics.
Oh, in the Wii.
You know, how can Sonic... the hedgehog be slower than Mario the Fat Plumber.
That is a bit of a failing of that particular series of games. It's just the intrinsic ridiculousness of it. I think the problem with Sonic was it was kind of introduced as being a cool character, and then you're immediately a bit of a hostage to fortune with that, because people don't think it's cool. Because Mario isn't meant to be cool.
That's true.
So therefore the fact that he isn't considered cool is not a problem. Right. And in fact, if anything, he's kind of cool because he's uncool.
He's sort of a cool.
A cool, very good, yes. Mm. Whereas Sonic is meant to be cool. And if you don't think he's cool, you just think he's a twat, basically, don't you? It's that kind of...
But I particularly chose Sonic just for the article, its final conclusion in reference to the Olympics game. It says, at one point, he even rides a horse. A horse? A hedgehog on a horse? What next? A plumber riding a dinosaur? Oh. Very, very droll.
Very amusing, very amusing.
I can
get more of that kind of amusement by subscribing to T3.
T3, yes, on iPad, on paper.
On everything.
Good.
Coming to mobile soon, apparently, as well.
Really? Actually, I noticed that even though there isn't really a mobile site, as it were, it does seem to run quite a lot slicker on my phone these days.
So yeah, it's all right.
That's good.
Yeah. I think we've cracked it.
Excellent.
The figures are through the roof, actually.
Well,
shows the value of a decent redesign.
It does.
Or at least, maybe it shows the value of delaying your redesign for ages, so your website is horribly archaic, and then the redesign just seems absolutely orgasmic by comparison.
You see, that's what you should have done, YouTube. That's about all for this week. Remember, T3.com has all the latest. T3 is on the shelves and on the iPad, and we're on iTunes every Friday. Till next week, then, I've been Dan Maudsley, and you've been listening to the T3 Podcast.